Living Fiction. Northwestern University, in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company, brings you a radio dramatization of another timeless story. Today, Anatole France's graceful and witty first novel, The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard, another in a series of living fiction.
Therese?
Nah, Hannibal. If you only had hands instead of paws.
Therese, my cravat. Do you hear my cravat?
Yes, Monsieur Bonnard. Coming.
Therese, our visitors will be here any minute. Must I appear disheveled because you have lost my cravat?
Your cravat isn't lost, Monsieur. Nothing is ever lost in this house because I have charge of everything.
Nah, Hannibal, out from under my feet. I must set this room in order. I can see Therese has been tidying up, and now nothing is in its proper place. For 40 years on the Quai Malaquais in Paris, she never allowed to touch anything in the study, my city of books. But since we sold everything and moved to the country, nothing is sacred. Yeah. Let me rest a minute. My bones are old. You know, Hannibal, it is a sad thing when the knees no longer match the heart. My heart is as full today as if I were still back in L'Ecole des Cartes, preparing myself for a visit to the beloved Clementine. But my legs act as if I've already carried my tombstone on my shoulders. Oh, Clementine, it was a capricious fate that separated us 50 years ago. And the same capricious fate that reawakened my old love for you in the autumn of my life when I was halting of step and dim of eye. Yes, Hannibal, I am an old, old man, too old for traveling and adventure. And yet something seemed to compel me to make that journey to visit Paul de Gabre and his charming wife at their chateau. All the way down, I muttered about the dirt and discomfort of the trip, and I kept asking myself what madness had made me leave my city of books. And I was still out of sorts, sitting in the de Gabre's living room and having tea. Why fate has sent me on that journey?
It was a tiring trip for you, Monsieur Bonnard.
Ah, Madame de Gabre. The older I get, the more I grow like my book. An old book needs a library to rest in.
Oh, we have another visitor besides yourself, Bonnard. A young girl.
So?
We wanted you to meet her. Ah, Jean, there you are. Come in, we were talking about you. Come in and meet Monsieur Bonnard. How do you do, monsieur?
I am improving rapidly. Thank you, mademoiselle.
I see you brought your statuette, Jean. Is it finished?
Almost. I still have to fix the crown.
Did you make that figurine, my dear? Let me see.
It's not very good, monsieur.
On the contrary, I think it is excellent. What was your model? I seem to recognize the costume, but I can't quite
say. I had no model, monsieur. I did it from a description that Madame de Gabre read to me. It was done in your honor, Monsieur Bonnard. I know you are particularly interested in the golden legend of Jacques de Jean, so I read Jean the description.
The good Saint Lactovius.
Then you recognize it.
But of course.
Would you like it, the statuette, as a present, monsieur?
But it isn't finished.
Why,
yet.
I should be delighted to give Lactovius a place of honor in my study.
Then let me finish it for you. I will go fix it for you right away.
How shy 16 years old can be.
Has the child studied art long?
Well, as a matter of fact, no. Hers is a sad story indeed. She is an orphan and she has no inheritance.
And that is what I wanted to ask you. Now that you've seen some of her work, do you think that she'd be able to earn her living doing these figures?
Frankly, no, madam. Commercial art is a difficult and ruthless business. But has she no inheritance?
Her father was my banker. We met her in Monaco last year.
He died recently?
Yes, of shame. Seems a certain speculation in which it involved his friends as well as himself proved to be a failure. Couldn't stand it.
And his wife died of shock soon after.
Oh, how tragic for the girl.
Jean is much like her mother, delicate and charming. There was not a person who did not admire the courage and nobility of Clementine Alexandre.
What? Who? Clementine.
You knew her, monsieur?
I knew her mother, Clementine Elier.
Oh, you apparently, Sir Bonnard. I didn't know they were friends of yours.
Then this girl, this sweet girl, is the granddaughter of my Clementine. Francine, my lifelong love. She was dead, and her granddaughter had been brought to my doorstep, poor and destitute. Sure, fate had a purpose in this chance meeting. And in death, I would be able to prove to Clementine the love I bore to her in life. My thoughts went instantly to the future of the child. Madame de Gebre, tell me everything you know of Jeanne. Where is she going to in Paris? How can I get to see her? Where will she be?
Oh, alas, I do not know, monsieur. Jeanne has a legal guardian appointed by the courts, and all of your dealings must be through him.
Who is he? What is his name?
Well, he's a Monsieur Mouche. He's a notary with offices on the Rue de la Cour.
I will see him the day I arrive in Paris. I was true to my word, Hannibal. The next morning, I presented myself at the offices of Maître Mouche. He was a thin, dried-up man full of ceremony. And as I sat in his dingy office, I realized I would have to be most diplomatic.
We are looking out for her as well as possible under the circumstances, Monsieur Fournard. You understand, of course, she is a penniless orphan.
Yes. Where is she living now, Monsieur Mouche?
I have placed her in a school run by a most excellent person. A Mademoiselle Virginie Préfère.
Mademoiselle Préfère? I'm afraid I do not know the institution.
She is an estimable lady, highly skilled in all the arts.
I would like very much to visit Jeanne.
We do not encourage visitors.
Then I may not see her at all.
I didn't say that. Mademoiselle Préfère and I believe that since the young lady will have to make her own way in life, she must not get false ideas of her position. However, I will permit you to visit her the first Thursday in every month.
Well, if that is the best you can do,
I feel it in her own interest. I will prepare the papers, and you may make your first visit tomorrow.
And so, Hannibal, the next day at 3 o'clock, I found myself seated in the austere visiting parlor of the Institute of Learning of Mademoiselle Virginie Préfère, waiting for that icicle of an old maid herself.
Monsieur Bonnard?
Mademoiselle Préfère, how do you do? I came to see Mademoiselle Jeanne Alexandre.
Jeanne Alexandre? That young lady has a class lesson to give this afternoon and a penance to do as well.
I have here a letter from Maître Mouche.
Oh, her dear and kindly guardian. A fine man. Well, let me see it.
Surely. I only met Jeanne recently myself, but I knew her grandmother many years ago.
If you knew her family, monsieur, I hope you deplore those crazy speculations that brought them to ruin.
Alas, mademoiselle, I know nothing of such things. I am only a humble scholar whose work has brought him the small honor of being a member of the Institute.
A member of the Institute?
Why, yes, mademoiselle, it is nothing.
truly, my humble establishment is honored by the visit of a member of the Institute.
Thank you, mademoiselle, but if I could see Jeanne...
No, but of course. Louise?
Mademoiselle?
Tell Mademoiselle Alexandre that Monsieur Sylvester Bournard, member of the Institute, has come to visit her.
Yes, mademoiselle, right away.
Jeanne is such a dear, impulsive child, Monsieur Bournard. She has quite captured my heart, and I have taken a special interest in her.
I am delighted to hear you say it, but a moment ago...
Sometimes I lie awake at night worrying about her future. With no dowry, you know, nowhere to turn.
Put your mind at rest, mademoiselle. I have certain small means myself and hope in due time to be able to provide...
Oh, I see.
Nothing extraordinary, but I hope that I may...
You sent for me, mademoiselle?
No, dear Jeanne. You have a visitor.
Monsieur Bonnard.
I am so glad to see you, Jeanne.
Well, I leave you two alone. I hope you will come often, Monsieur Bonnard.
Thank you. I hope I may.
Be a good little lady now, Jeanne. Such a sweet, headstrong girl.
Now, my dear, tell me all about yourself.
There is little to tell.
Are you happy here with Mademoiselle Préfère?
Oh, no, monsieur. But where else can I go? Monsieur Mouche says I'm lucky even to be here.
Perhaps things will be a bit better in the future. Have you kept up with your modeling?
I have no wax.
But that is a pity. You do it so well.
Well, I did have a few small pieces.
And did you do another of the good saints of Saint-Germain-des-Prés?
No. This time I copied a picture from a storybook. It was a Saint George. But I had an accident.
Oh, what happened?
Well, you see, I had no place to keep the statuette while I was working on it because I didn't want Mademoiselle Préfère to find it. so I just carried it in my pocket.
But that would seem to be all right.
But I sat down on him. I mean the statue, and, well, you can see for yourself.
Yes, it would seem that this St. George had encountered one dragon too many, huh? Well, perhaps in one of my strolls along the quay, I will be able to find some more wax and bring it to you.
Monsieur Bonnard, I have finished my duties for the afternoon. Can we join you?
Well, you are very kind, mademoiselle, but I really must be...
No, monsieur. I will offer tea.
I wouldn't hear of it. I trespass on your time and the schedule of your work. Perhaps another day.
You will come soon again, I hope?
I come on the schedule Monsieur Mouche gave me, mademoiselle. One semaine.
Not for a whole month?
Jean, you would like to see Monsieur Bonnard more often, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes.
Well, then, I will have a little talk with Monsieur Mouche. I think we will be able to arrange for Monsieur Bonnard to visit us as often as he cares to come. Oh, it is indeed an honor to have a member of the Institute visiting one of my pupils.
Mademoiselle Préfère was as good as her word. Less than a week later, Mouche was seated in my city of books with his umbrella clasped firmly between his knees, his hands on the plain bone handle, his sharp eyes picking out every detail of my apartment as he talked.
And as I said in our first meeting, monsieur, mademoiselle is a person of rare discernment, highly honorable and capable of great devotion.
I am glad to hear you say it, Monsieur Mouche. Her interest
How
in Jean...
How fond she has grown of that little girl. She has become a dear and devoted mother to her. And your interest in Jean is very touching indeed. Mademoiselle Préfère has spoken to me, sir. And on her recommendation, I am glad as Jean's guardian to tell you that you may visit her whenever you like.
Oh, that is agreeable news indeed, Monsieur
Mouche.
And
I have taken the liberty that to suggest that during the approaching summer vacation, Mademoiselle Préfère bring Jean here to visit you, to save you the long walk to the school.
Why, I should be delighted. And so it was that Mademoiselle Préfère started her summer visits with Jean. I came to look forward to those afternoons with mingled emotions. Oh, it was always a delight to see Jean. Mademoiselle Préfère was always pottering about, rearranging books and furniture, puffing up pillows behind my head, and generally showering me with unwelcome attention. During that summer semester, a young student named Henri Jalisse had come to see me about some researches he was making. And as I had many original source books on the subject, he had taken over a little back room as a sort of office. He came in one afternoon shortly after Mademoiselle Préfère and Jean had arrived, but stopped shortly when he saw them.
Monsieur Bonnard?
Yes, Henri?
Oh, excuse me, you have company.
No, not at all, young man. You may consider us a part of the family.
Mademoiselle Préfère, Mademoiselle Alexander, this is Henri Jelly.
How do you do?
How do you do, monsieur? I am very pleased to meet you.
The pleasure is mine, mademoiselle.
Well, Henri, what is it? Do you want something?
Yes, monsieur. I have run out of ink.
Oh, of course, my boy. Therese will show you where it is.
Therese is out, I'm afraid.
Well, then I will...
I know where it is. I'll get it for him, Monsieur Bonnard. May I, please?
I don't want to trouble you, mademoiselle.
Oh, it's no trouble at all. Come along. It's right in this back closet down the hall.
Oh, Monsieur Bonnard, how generous is a great scholar to give time to these young men.
Not at all.
Oh, you are too generous, too kind and patient with everyone. You even have to put up with the slovenliness of that Therese of yours, who is always wandering off just when she's wanted.
She has served me faithfully for years, mademoiselle.
Oh, you don't know what faithful, loving care can be, monsieur. Oh, what if you should fall sick with only this coarse woman to look after you?
Why, mademoiselle,
oh, there is not a woman in Paris who would not deem it an honor to share your existence and bear your illustrious name.
Really, mademoiselle, I am far past the age when one gives any thought to such things.
No, but your health, your dear, dear health. Oh, joyfully, I would shed the last drop of my blood to preserve the life of such an intellect.
Really, I don't see
that. Can't you see what true service this would be? It would make me the happiest woman on earth.
Your generous thoughts flatter me, mademoiselle.
Oh, dear, monsieur.
I fear, though, that your advice comes to me a little late in life to be of any value. However, I will give it my careful consideration.
You will?
Why, yes, of course.
Oh, my dear monsieur, you honor me too much. You must simply come to dinner this Thursday where we can discuss this matter further.
Hannibal? Hannibal, what a dinner that was. Monsieur Mousse was there. And while I choked down the roast and drank the plainest vin ordinaire I've ever tasted, Mademoiselle Prefer never once stopped talking. I grew more and more uncomfortable as she rehearsed our conversation of that afternoon.
So you see, Monsieur Mouche, I took courage and spoke up when he smiled at me.
Quite proper, my dear lady.
I spoke the words that I could see trembling on his lips.
Good, good.
Mademoiselle Prefer,
No, let me tell him. I said that to look after him, to be by his side at any time he needed me, would make me the happiest woman in the world.
Oh, now, my friend, what wonderful news.
I do not understand.
No, but Monsieur Mouche is my oldest friend, Sylvester. It is right that he should be the first to know that we are betrothed.
Yeah, betrothed? By my faith, I never said...
Congratulations, monsieur. Your hand.
Let me understand this, Mademoiselle Prefer. Are you saying we are to be married?
So you agreed, monsieur?
I agree to nothing of the sort. I have not intended to get married. I do not intend to marry now, nor do I contemplate that I ever shall. Can I speak more plainly than that, mademoiselle?
How can you say that?
I must speak the truth.
Oh, you have broken my heart. Oh, Monsieur Mouche, I appeal to you, a gentleman.
This is a bitter scene you have forced me to witness, Bonnard.
But why? It was just a misunderstanding.
But it is better than it should have happened now. And spare the tender feelings of Mademoiselle Prefer later on.
What do you mean?
I have long felt that Bonnard's association with his housekeeper made him improper company for decent people.
What? You mean Terry?
Whatever her name. Your actions here tonight have proved beyond the shadow of a doubt what a scoundrel you are.
But this is monstrous.
I am afraid, monsieur, that under these circumstances, I shall insist that you cease your attentions to my ward, Jean Alexander.
What? Not see Jean? Oh, no,
yes.
No.
Never show yourself at this house again.
That night, Hannibal, my brain in a whirl. Not see Jean again. They had taken her from me. I could think of nothing else. I must have walked for hours through the snow before I came to my apartment on the Quai Malaquais. Paris was waiting for me, worried. Well, she might worry, for I took to bed with a fever that night, and for weeks some heavy hand pressed to my head to my pillow, while I dreamed nightmares populated by ogre mouches and gargoyle prefers. When I was finally able to be up, Madame de Gabry came to me and had some very bad news. Very bad news.
Jean has been reduced to the status of a servant, sweeping classrooms and cleaning the kitchen.
Incredible. Impossible. Madame de Gabry, we must do something.
Paul went to see Maître Mouche. We wanted Jean to come to live with us. But he said she was well enough off where she was.
But there must be something to prevent this monster from holding on to Jean.
I'm afraid that he has the law on his side, monsieur.
Nah, the law. The law be hanged.
Please, monsieur.
You must pardon me, madame. I am too excited, but I will repeat, the law be hanged. Here it is, the Rue des Morts. Well, Bonnard, here you are.
Yes?
I come to see Mademoiselle Jean Alexandra.
No. Mademoiselle Prefer has forbidden me.
Don't close the door, my child. I'm an old man and mean no harm.
Mademoiselle said especially you were not to be allowed in.
Will you take Jean a note for me?
No. she will beat me. You must go away.
Wait, wait. Here, my child. Take this gold piece. Go on, take it. Now, could you not arrange for Mademoiselle Jean to speak to me through a window? It would be of no harm.
Be at the side window in an hour. Monsieur?
I'm here, Jean. And tell me, Jean, quickly, what have they done to you?
I'm all right, monsieur.
But what are you doing here?
They have me working in the kitchen, and I sweep the schoolroom.
Sweeping? Beastly.
It is because my guardian does not pay for my schooling any longer.
Moosh, that rogue. Why didn't you write to me?
I could not. I was watched and dared not.
Infamous. Infamous. Jean?
Yes?
Does that room you are in now open into the courtyard?
Yes, it does.
And could you open the outside door into the street yourself?
Yes, if there's nobody in the porter's lodge.
Is there anyone there now? Go and look.
No, monsieur. No, he must be having his supper.
Then come quickly, my child. If you can, take a coat. Any coat you can lay your hands on, for the night is bitter. But come immediately, for we make sure that no one sees you.
You want me to come with you now?
There's no time to lose. We will talk later. Come. In a minute that seemed an age, I saw Jean's head peek around the big iron door. I seized her by the hand, and we ran through the swirling fog that soaked our clothes. I heard a cab in the distance. It came towards us out of the fog. In desperation, I all but threw myself under the wheels, and the cab driver saw me and stopped.
Suck it down, you old fool! Where do you think you're going?
Take us to the Rue Liagre, number 17. Hurry, there's a gold louis in it for you. Peering out through the little black window, I could see no one following. And the cabman earned his tip by getting us to the de Gabry's in record time. We pelted up the stairs, looking behind to see if we were followed. I knocked on the door. Oh, Paul, I hope you are at home.
But, Bonar, what are you doing here this hour of the night?
Paul, I had to say...
And Jean, well, come in, both of you. Well, you must be soaked.
Thank you, we've had a difficult time.
Monsieur Bonar, Jean, what on earth has happened here? What? Jean is supposed to be at Mademoiselle Fefferre's.
No, Madame de Gabry. I rescued her.
What? Rescued her? You mean that...
Come inside, Jean. Come into the living room and let me give you some dry clothes. And, Paul, you take Monsieur Bernard into the library and find out what this is all about.
Yes, you're welcome. And so I told Paul the whole story, omitting nothing. He listened in solemn judgment, like a prosecuting lawyer, then reached over and pulled one of his big books off the shelf beside him.
Well... Here's your law, Bonar. Corruption of a minor. Abduction and kidnapping under Article 354. The way it looks now, you'll get at least 10 years in prison.
What? Oh, Paul, for saving an innocent child, it can't be.
Oh, Bonar. Your heart has run quite away with your head. And I will aid and abet you by keeping Jean here for tonight. And then first thing in the morning, I think I'll have a talk with this Monsieur Mouche.
Oh, Paul, how can I ever thank you? And you'll come and see me in the morning after you have seen this mouche?
Certainly. And now you run straight home in bed.
But when I got home, I had no peace. Any moment I expected to hear a knocking at my door, the police coming to take me away.
Who is it?
Only me, monsieur. Therese. Would you like a glass of hot milk, monsieur?
No, thank you, Therese. I am going straight to bed. And what a night I spent. I hardly closed my eyes. The disgrace I faced. A member of the Institute hauled off to a common prison for abduction. Next morning, true to his word, Paul de Gabry came into my room. I was still in bed, and such was my agitation, I could hardly wait for him to speak.
Well, how are you feeling after your wild night's adventure, my friend?
Paul, please, please, spare me the civilities.
Well, I...
You have seen him, Monsieur Mouche.
I've been to his office.
But he wasn't there.
No, Monar, I think there must be a special providence watching over gentle old souls like you.
Why? What makes you...
Oh, perhaps it's that little statue there, the good Saint Droctovian.
Paul, you are being cruel.
Oh, perhaps I am. Well, no, my friend, I didn't see Monsieur Mouche, nor am I likely to, unless the police see him first. You know, your own crime has taken a very poor second place among his concerns to one of his own.
Yes?
Yes. 3 days ago, Monsieur Mouche did us the favor of absconding Bonnard with all his client's money.
Yes, Hannibal, that is the story of my crime, which was really, I think you'll agree, a good deed, and how I escaped its consequences. And as for Jean, she... Good heavens, she will be here any minute.
Therese, my cravat, for the love of Droctovius and the good clerk, Alexander.
Here it is, monsieur, just where I left it. If it wasn't for me, you would greet our children with a gaping collar. If I didn't have to waste so much time hunting up things where you dropped them, I'd have finished long ago.
Yes, Hannibal, Jean is coming to see us again. It is truly amazing the great interest she took in the Abbey of Saint-Germain-des-Prés after I came to be her legal guardian and she came to live in the City of Books. Such a great interest that she helped young Henri Jolisse with his thesis, and I feel sure was responsible for his honors on graduation. And not for one instant do I regret having sold my books to provide a dowry for her and Henri Jolisse. Though it seems that they marry very young these days.
There they are. Therese, answer the door at once. It is Mademoiselle Jean.
I'm coming. Do not rip the handle off the bell pull.
My guardian, how glad I am to see you.
Jean, how radiantly beautiful you look. Where is Henri?
He's waiting outside for a moment. I wanted to tell you the news myself.
News? What news?
Oh, my guardian, I don't know how to say it, but if it should be a boy, we shall call him Sylvester.
If it should be a... Oh, Jean, my ward. Dearest granddaughter of Clementine, I am so happy, so proud this day.
Dear Monsieur Bonnard.
May God's blessing be with you, Jean, and your children, and your children's children forever.
Let me fetch Henri.
God's blessing on you both, for my cup runneth over. Now, Lord, lettest thou thy servant depart in peace, according to thy will.
The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France is another in a series of living fiction presented each week by Northwestern University in cooperation with the National Broadcasting Company. The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard was adapted for radio by Gordon Auchincloss. The cast and directors were students of Northwestern University. Sylvester Bonnard was played by Fred Stein, Jean Alexandre by Germaine Golden, and Mademoiselle Prefer by Faith Kellogg. Others were Marjorie Paul, Joni Johnson, Nancy Rice, David Press, Ike Layfield, and Jane Conway. The assistant director was Chuck Cooper. The director was Dave Carlson. The entire production was under the supervision of John Cowan, and this is Dick Nolan.